here, but I must admit that my talk sort of is in the category and now for something completely different. So what I should probably begin is by giving you some background about what are these block copolymer materials, and then talk about a theory that we developed quite a while ago to look at an approximate analytical theory that looks at nucleation between ordered phases in these block copolymers, and then talk about some more recent work performed by my master's student, Russell Spencer, who's in the audience, on numerical work to test that approximate theory from way back when. So a block copolymer is a polymeric material that's made up of two, you can think of it as two homopolymer blocks which are distinct. Consider this red block to be, say, polystyrene, and this blue block here to be polyisoprene, and they're covalently bonded together to give one polymeric molecule. Now, this is the most simple example of a material that has competing interactions and can lead to self-assembled structures. And the competing interactions are, on the one hand, entropy, which likes to coil. The polymer likes to coil, so it can increase its entropy. But on the other hand, having dissimilar monomer species here means that there's a repulsive interaction between red and blue, and that would tend to favor stretched-out configurations. So there's a competition between these two types of configurations, and as you decrease temperature, entropy becomes less important and energy becomes more important. And so as you decrease temperature, you favor this configuration, stretching. But the polymer can't stretch forever because it's connected, and so what it does is it reaches a compromise and forms a microstructure, okay? So what I've shown you here are regions here which are blue, which are primarily where the blue blocks live, and regions here which are red, where primarily where the red blocks live. And this is a periodic layered structure with a certain period, L-naught. And the period here is characteristic of the size of the polymer itself. So this might be tens of nanometers long. Now, if your polymer is not completely symmetric in red and blue, it can also form non-lamellar phases. Here's an example of a hexagonal cylinder phase. And this picture here is from a nice molecular dynamics simulation of Michael Klein, and I just show it to you here just to give you a sense of what the actual molecules here are doing in this layered structure. Okay, so this is a layered structure, and I just show it to you for that reason. Okay, so you can take this physics, and you can put this together and calculate the phase diagram, and this was done, originally in 1980 by Leibler, and then refined using self-consistent mean field theory by Mattson and Schick. What I'm plotting here is, you can think of as the inverse temperature. So this is the high temperature phase, this is the low temperature phase, and I'm plotting here the asymmetry of the actual molecule. So for perfectly symmetric molecules, you enter into this lamellar phase, where you get a structure like this, but as you increase the asymmetry, you cross over a phase boundary into a phase of hexagonally arranged cylindrical domains, and then finally at highly asymmetric polymers, the small block goes into spheres, which arrange themselves on a body-centered cubic lattice. And in between the lamella and the cylinder, you can get this very interesting network phase. So these phases are perfectly periodic with their respective symmetry groups, and people have been exploring them for some time for applications in nanolithography or applications in high-density memory. You can think about coating a surface with a bunch of these little nanospheres and creating 10-nanometer memory locations, okay? And these materials are good in any situation where you want to control and create structure at sub-20-nanometer scales. However, reality is more complicated than this simple picture of perfectly periodic structures. And in fact, what you often see in experiments, and these are all transmission electron microscope images, is not perfectly ordered structures. You see regions where cylinders coexist with lamella, or cylinders coexist with disordered spheres. Or in this case, this is a gyroid structure coexisting with a perforated lamella. And what I'm showing you here are systems which are somewhere between two ordered states, okay? Because somehow the experimenters have prepared these systems and changed the temperature so as to go through a phase boundary, and these systems are halfway between converting from one state to the other. And the reason why we see these is because these are polymeric materials, and the time scales in the polymeric materials are very long. And so it's not very unusual to see states of this. And so this is by far the more typical situation. These are out of equilibrium structures. And so in order to understand how to create usable structures for, say, a memory array, you'd want to understand how to create very long-range ordered periodic structures. And in order to understand that, you would need to understand this and the dynamics of how these things form and how to anneal them out quickly. So in order to do this, you have to think about the problem in terms of a free energy landscape. A free energy landscape here as a function of some order parameter that tells you sort of what phase you're in. So the stable phase is your target phase, whether it's lamella or cylinders or body-centered cubic spheres. It sits down here. And as I've said, in the free energy landscape, away from stability, you can have phases that sit on a plateau here, which are unstable because there's no barriers. Or you could have the system stuck in some metastable free energy minimum where there's a barrier to actually converting to the stable phase. And so the phases that I showed you on the previous view graph are actually systems which are somewhere between a metastable ordered phase and a stable ordered phase. And so they're somewhere along their transition pathway to stability. So there are two basic mechanisms if you want to convert one ordered phase into another ordered phase. There are two regimes that you can think about depending on the stability of your initial ordered phase. So if your initial ordered phase is unstable, then it can convert into your stable phase using a mechanism known as spinodal decomposition. And I show you this here in the situation of here you have an unstable lamellar phase. Okay, it's thermodynamically unstable. And what happens is it develops these ripples along the lamella, which grow in amplitude until eventually the system converts over into cylinders. Okay? And this, you might think, is what is actually going on in here. You have these modulated layered phases, which are converting into cylinders. Now, the theory for this is rather well developed. Anchang Shi developed it in the mid-90s. Basically, you take this anisotropic initial state, and you look at the stability of it to periodic fluctuations, and you look at for when an eigenvalue becomes negative, and then you have an instability. And in addition, it's actually quite easy to study these things numerically because, again, you can take advantage of the fact that your structure is periodic and the disturbance is periodic and it's uniform across the whole system. And so you can examine a rather small system and get results for the kinetics of spinodal transitions. However, in the other case back here, where you're actually starting in a system which is actually metastable and you have to jump over some barrier, then you're in the situation where you're talking about nucleation and growth. And I'll just for a second go over the classical nucleation theory. The idea here is that you start with a metastable state, which is in this case is a supercooled vapor phase. You create a droplet of the stable phase, which is a liquid, some droplet of radius r, and then you look at the free energy balance between the free energy, the volume free energy here, which is negative because the free energy inside the liquid is lower than the free energy at the exterior vapor. So you lower the free energy by creating this vapor, but you also raise the free energy here by creating this interface between the vapor and the liquid. And so this raising of the free energy accounts, if this is the free energy function radius, accounts for this part of the curve. But then eventually, if your droplet gets large enough, the bulk contribution takes over. And so you have this picture here where you have a droplet, you form a droplet. If the droplet is smaller than some critical radius, the surface tension dominates and shrinks the droplet. On the other hand, if the droplet is larger than some critical radius, the bulk contribution dominates and drives it into the stable phase. And the critical radius, you can simply calculate this by minimizing this free energy, is given by a ratio of the surface tension to the difference in free energies between the two phases. So this is a very simple scenario for a situation where you have liquid vapor, which are both two unstructured isotropic phases, the situation gets a little bit more complicated when you want to examine a phase which has microstructure in it. And so this is just a short movie of a growing droplet. So the first problem is that if you're looking at nucleation, unlike spinola decomposition, you have an inhomogeneous problem where you have a metastable, say, cylinder phase out here and a lamellar phase growing into it. And so different parts of your sample are doing different things, and you have to account for the whole problem. Furthermore, there are multiple length scales in this problem due to the microstructure. There's a length scale characterizing the interface between the red domains and the blue domains. There's the length scale, which is the distance between the domains, the distance between the cylinders, that's L naught. There's a length scale that characterizes the interface width between the lamella phase and the cylinder phase. And then there is the length scale of the entire droplet itself. So in order to accurately try to calculate anything with this, you have to somehow incorporate these multiple length scales into your theory or into your simulation. Furthermore, the existence of microstructure leads to a few interesting questions. What's the structure of the interface as this lamella transforms into cylinders here, or whether it transforms into cylinders here? There's an interesting region where one ordered structure is transforming into another. The microstructure also leads to an anisotropy in the interfacial free energy. Okay, so now you have to talk about an orientation-dependent interfacial free energy, and this will lead to a non-spherical nucleus shape. All these things lead to the conclusion that if you want to study nucleation and growth numerically, certainly, it's a challenging problem because of these multi-length scales and because of this lack of, well, symmetry in the problem. Okay, so I'm just going to talk briefly about an approach that we came up with many years ago to handle this. This is an approximate theoretical approach. It's based on this Landau-Brzozowski free energy. So this is basically a Landau free energy here in terms of some order parameters phi, which is phi is the difference between the density of one block minus its average. And if your polymer is asymmetric, you actually do have a cubic term in here reflecting the asymmetry of the polymer and the asymmetry of these minima. The other thing which is new is this term here, which is not the usual square gradient term that you get in the Landau free energy, but includes a length scale here, or inverse length scale Q naught, which, if you think about it, this gradient term enforces the microstructural periodicity in the system. Okay, so it favors density configurations with a certain microstructural periodicity. In fact, this model, and C is just a constant. This model here, in fact, is used in different contexts. It can be used in block copolymers, but it can also be used to study crystallization of atoms. It's just you have to adjust the length scale to be whatever it is for the problem at hand. The other thing about this free energy, which is nice, is that it exhibits as local minima all the equilibrium phases that you see in the diblock copolymer phase diagram, and so it has the right equilibrium physics built into it. So the idea that we had was that way back when is that instead of trying to simulate nucleation in this problem, we would try to do an analytical theory based on this free energy. And so the first thing we did was we used this free energy to calculate the interfacial tension of an interface of arbitrary orientation with respect to the microstructure, and we did that approximately. So we found that our interfacial tension, not surprisingly, varied with orientation. We used that information about the surface free energy to calculate the droplet shape, and we used that using the Wolf construction, which basically says, for a fixed droplet volume, calculate the shape of the droplet that minimizes the surface free energy. And so, for example, in the case of a lamella cylinder transition, we found that our droplets, in looking at them from one view, look like a lens, and then top view, they're rather circular. And so we found that, indeed, there are lens-shaped droplets in this nucleation scenario. And then finally, knowing this droplet shape, we were able to apply classical nucleation theory to determine the critical radius and the free energy barriers, et cetera, in this problem. So that's what we did. The issue here is that there are a few issues with this theory. One is that there's approximations that are made to calculate the surface energy. There is the approximation of classical nucleation theory, which restricts this validity of the theory to be close to coexistence, where you have a very large droplet with a good separation between what's the inside of the droplet, the bulk, and what the surface of the droplet is. And so there are a variety of approximations. And so what we were motivated to do is to actually do some numerical work on this. For one purpose is just to see whether it's feasible to actually study nucleation numerically in the system. But the second purpose was to test some of the assumptions and the range of validity of this approximate theory from 2003. And so this is the work that Russell's been working on this year. So again, our model's based on the same free energy that we used in the theory, but we're going to add some dynamics to this model. So we take the free energy, take the derivative with respect to the density, that gives us a chemical potential. Take one gradient of the chemical potential, that gives you a flux, and then the divergence of the flux is put into it, what's essentially a continuity equation for the density, okay? So then this leads to this model. This is a conserved density order parameter. And so we will just go ahead to try to simulate this model. Now note that sometimes people will put a noise term in this model. We haven't yet put a noise term into the model. And what that means is that when I say we're studying nucleation, I don't mean to say that we're creating a large box with, say, a metastable cylinder phase in it, and then having the noise fluctuate until eventually we create a critical nucleus, and then that critical nucleus grows. Okay, we're not quite at that stage yet. What we're going to do instead is just look at one. We're actually going to form a nucleus and then determine whether that nucleus actually grows or shrinks or not. So in terms of the numerical implementation, we're using finite difference scheme on a large cubic lattice. Our largest run is 512 by 580 by 200, and we run that on 64 core on SharkNet using message passing interface, and those types of runs might take a week. Our typical run is smaller than this. A typical run might take a day. The initial state, as I said, initially what we do is we find a metastable, say, cylinder phase. In this case, we let that run and equilibrate. Again, there's no noise in the simulation, so what we have to do is add in a nucleus. And we can guess sort of what the shape of the nucleus can be. We can start with a sphere and evolve it until it becomes non-spherical, and then put that shape in. And we've been playing around with that. So we put in this nucleus shape. The idea here is to try to calculate the critical size for a given undercooling. So what we can do is we can fix the undercooling at some fixed value. This is a fixed value of temperature under the coexistence temperature. And we can throw in a nucleus of a given size. And if it's below a certain threshold size, it shrinks away. And the system heals itself and becomes back to the metastable cylinder phase. And if it's larger than a certain size, then the system will grow. So this result by itself is very interesting, because it wasn't clear to me when we started this project that we could actually find a critical radius in this problem. But we can. And by looking at various sizes around criticality, we can estimate for this particular undercooling that the critical radius is about 6 lattice spacings, or 6 cylinders in diameter, roughly. So we can do this now for a variety of undercoolings. Okay, and so what I plot here is the undercooling all the way from coexistence, where both phases have the same free energy, all the way to deep quenches, where the system is the metastable phase is becoming more and more unstable. And then I plot here actually the volume of the droplet. And you can see that as you approach the coexistence, as you would expect from classical nucleation theory, that the radius of the droplet actually grows, and we can see that. And then far away from coexistence, the droplet, the critical droplet, okay, that's the droplet above this size, everything grows, and below this size, everything shrinks. The critical droplet here actually becomes so small that it's essentially basically one cylinder spacing in size. And at that point, you really don't have much of a droplet left at all. Okay? So we can see this. Now, the thing is that our theory makes a prediction about what this curve should look like. And so this is our first test of our approximate theory. Again, the green curve is the theory from 2003. Since the theory uses the same free energy functional as we use to drive the dynamics, there are no free parameters in this fit. Okay? And you see that very close to coexistence, there's an overlap in the data, and the theory follows the data up to a certain point, and then it fails dramatically farther away from coexistence. But this is sort of what you would expect. Right? You would expect, this is a classical nucleation theory, you'd expect it to be good near coexistence, and of course when your droplet becomes really, really small so that you cannot distinguish bulk from surface, you'd expect the classical nucleation theory to break down quite substantially. And so this is a nice test of the range of validity of our theory. Now, I should mention, though, that this is a logarithmic scale, and I hate logarithmic scales because they mask a lot of badness. And so this is actually the linear scale, where you can actually see that there is a significant difference between the theoretical curve and the simulation. And we have some ideas about where that difference comes from, but I might reserve that for the questions. Another thing that we can look at is the shape of the droplet as it evolves. So here, this is the droplet shape that we see. It is, in fact, lens-like, just as predicted by the theory. But you can look closer and make more detailed predictions. You can look at the aspect ratio, which is this length along x, this axis divided by the longest axis, which is along y. And you can look at the length along z divided by the longest axis. And so the aspect ratio along x follows this line here, this red line. There's the data points, and the asymptotes down to a constant, and the aspect ratio along z also approaches a constant like this. Okay, so what this is telling us is that as the shape evolves, as the droplet evolves, the shape of the droplet remains constant. So it basically just scales as you go along. And the asymptote here, well, this solid red line here and this solid blue black line here is what is predicted by our 2003 approximate theory. Okay, so well, it looks like it's asymptoting to the theory here, which is simply determined by a ratio of surface tensions. It's not asymptoting to the theory over here. And so what we did is we went, well, obviously this is a long time, this is a time, so this is long time behavior here. Maybe this is related to the velocities of the interface. And so what we plotted here was the ratio of Vx over Vy in this asymptotic range here, and Vz over Vy. And indeed, we see that in the appropriate range, the aspect ratio appears to be asymptoting to the ratio of these velocities here and here. And so that it looks like the long time shape is just simply being determined by the kinetic phenomena rather than equilibrium phenomena, such as a balance of the interfacial tension. OK, so I'll just quickly go through this. What I'm plotting here is our theory, though, has kinetics in it, which is another advantage. Our simulation has kinetics in it, which is another advantage over our theory. So we can actually look at the length of the various Lx, Ly, Lz as a function of time. And we see that after some initial time where the droplet is sort of changing shape and sort of deciding what it wants to do, it will enter into a linear growth regime. And so this is a regime where the slope is constant, so the velocity here is constant. And this supports assumptions that are commonly made in the literature about constant growth velocities for fronts moving through these ordered phases. And so I'll just skip that. I just want to mention we can extend this model, this time-dependent Landau-Brzozowski model. It's quite flexible. And we can use it to observe other types of dynamical phenomena in block copolymers, notably crystallization. So you can think of again, this is the block copolymer phase diagram. Here you are in the disordered phase. You can quench into a region where the body-centered cubic sphere phase is stable, and you can watch to see how that crystallization, how the spheres form, and how they form onto the lattice. And what we did here was we just started, we just initialized an initial condition with a random arrangement of spheres and let it run, and we saw that we could actually see the crystallization happen. So this is very preliminary data, but it suggests that we could actually study the kinetics of crystallization. This is very interesting because there are different kinetic pathways that people have seen to form BCC spheres. And also the disordered phase itself, the nature of the disordered phase is somewhat controversial. The idea of are these micelles there or are they something else? And do they form at certain temperatures? And so we may be able to shed some light onto that question. Okay, and so I think I'm pretty much out of time, right? So I'm just going to summarize and acknowledge my graduate student, Russell, and others. So thank you.